Welcome to Decide Your Destiny. Here's your host, Josh Jacobs.
Welcome to Decide Your Destiny. I'm your host, Josh Jacobs, and I'm really excited for the show today. We have a very special guest. Born in Iran, he moved to the States as a refugee and found his passion in fitness. After the crash in 2008 left him in foreclosure, he went on to create the Camp Transformation Center, scaled to over 100 locations, and has helped over 100,000 people transform their bodies. Most recently, he created the 1% Club to help you get in the top 1%. Please welcome doctor, author, $100 million CEO, and the first bodybuilder in history to win first place in every weight class, Sam Bakhtiar. Thank you so much for being here today, Sam. I really appreciate it, man.
Josh, it's an honor and it's a privilege. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Thank you for being here, man. Let's get into it. I kind of want to give people an idea about your background. So tell me about your childhood. You know, where did you grow up? What was life like?
So I was born in Iran, which is a third world country. And the childhood was, you know, it was, when I look back, it wasn't that bad because I was a child. Because I didn't realize what bad was. When you're born in a crazy environment, you know, you think that's normal. You know, but when I grew up and look back, I'm like, wow, that was pretty rough. You know, so, you know, when I was 3 years old, two things happened that forever changed the trajectory of my life. One was Iran went to war with Saddam Hussein in Iraq. And, you know, we started, you know, an 8-year war that over 1 million people died. And every night we got bombed on and you know, there was planes flying over and dropping bombs and getting attacked. And then at that time, my mom and my dad split up. And my dad moved to Canada and I never saw him again. You know, so that was growing up. And then when I was 11 years old, my mom said, you know what? I don't want my son to die and go to war. You know, we migrated to the United States as refugees. And that was a whole different kind of trauma where, you know, you left a country that you knew, all your friends, all your family, come to a country that you don't know. We only had my uncle here. We didn't know the culture. We didn't speak the language. And, you know, I thought America was like Beverly Hills because that's what I saw on TV. But we came to a little town called Sharon in the state of Pennsylvania, which was, you know, pretty depressing town. It was an old steel mill town. And, you know, and my uncle had a convenience store in one of the worst neighborhoods that I've seen to date. So that was my first impression of America. It was a total culture shock.
Yeah. So you came here at 11 years old. I mean, first of all, that background is, you know, you come from, I know you said it felt normal at the time and you look back now, but, you know, that's an upbringing that not many people have the experience of. How do you think that plays into who you are today? Did that help you form your mindset? Did that make you harder? How do you think that helped you?
I think, you know, when you go through a tough time in your life, the more resilient you become, the more obstacles you overcome, the more resilient you become, man. You know, if you've never gone through anything in life, and everything's been spoon-fed to you, and you almost have no, you know, you don't have no grit, you don't have any resiliency. So I think that everything that happened in my life happened for me. You know what I mean? I've gone through so much. And I've learned that, you know, every time I went through in the beginning years of my life, I was like, oh my God, that was devastating. I don't know what I'm going to do. But you go through so many obstacles. And after a while, you expect obstacles, you know, and you understand that obstacle is the way. You know what I mean? Obstacle is not in the way. Obstacle is the way. You know? So yeah. I've learned now that when there's an obstacle present itself, you know, I just be like, oh, cool. That means I'm getting somewhere. You know, I'm breaking a plateau. I'm taking a leap. And I look forward now to solving obstacles or climbing over obstacles and see what's in store for me on the other side.
I'm going to repeat what you just said because I personally had this thing where I would avoid challenges, like anything that was challenging, mm-hmm. I just would shy away from it for a long time. And like you, I heard this enough where you gotta embrace challenges. You have to go towards obstacles because a breakthrough is on the other side of that. And it's life-changing when you just adapt that little change of embracing the challenge and, you know, pushing yourself. So that said, when you were 11 and you came here, what was it like? Did you know any English at that point?
I didn't know any English. I didn't know the culture. I walked into school in seventh grade, not knowing English. I wasn't black. I wasn't white because we were in Sharon, PA. There was no other foreigners there, you know, and my clothes were different. My haircut was different, you know, so it was a culture shock. And looking back right now, you know, I think that was, if I can call anything a trauma, I don't call it trauma, but a shock, you know, bombing didn't shock me as much as coming to America did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I was 3-4 years old. Like I was used to being bombed on. That was a normal night when you see planes, you know, throwing, you know, doing bombs and you see anti-air. That was a normal night. I expected that. You know what I mean? Coming to America, you know, I was not older. I was 11, you know, and now I'm coming to a new environment that everything is different. Everybody looks different. You know, it was culture shock. And like I said, you know, being preteens, coming to a new country and, you know, and you don't have anybody in the same race, ethnicity, man, I got bullied. I got beat up. I got called names, everything and anything that you can imagine, you know, that kids do at school, you know, happened to me. And I look back again, gosh, man, I'm so glad. You know, it just made me who I am today. A lot of times, you know, we always talk about bullying and how bullying is bad and all that. I wholeheartedly agree with that. But bullying to me is a fact of life. It's a fact of life. I mean, gosh, man, we're the United States of America. We're the most powerful country in the world. Don't we bully other people? We do. If another country gets out of line, we'll send them a warning. Hey, man, don't do that or we're going to come and take care of you, right?
Yeah.
So the bigger guy, the bigger person or the bully is always going to be there. Now, I think that's going to make you more resilient. I'm not saying it's right to do, and I don't think kids should, you know, bully that, but it happens. You can't prevent that. Right. Yeah. So, and bullying, getting bullied and getting called names, and it's made me so much more resilient that if somebody right now, you know, doesn't like me or call me names or it's, all right, cool. I'm used to it. No big deal.
Yeah, like David Goggins says, it calluses your mind.
Yes.
Yeah.
So true.
Awesome. So, all right, let's talk about when did you have your first experience with entrepreneurship?
So my first experience as an entrepreneurship was when I first came to America and I saw my uncle had that convenience store in the hood. You know what I mean? You know, my uncle had a business. I'm talking about in the worst neighborhood. You know, where there's pimps, drug dealers, you know, and prostitutes outside and abandoned building and all that kind of stuff. That's how I saw my uncle kind of had to open up the store, work there and stock the store. And I was in charge of selling the candy and the cigarettes, you know, and that's when I saw how my uncle was an entrepreneur and how he was making money and what he was doing. So that was my first exposure. You know, I didn't become an entrepreneur till I graduated from school. And I started my first business in the year 2000. I started my first personal training company February 15th of 2000. And now, you know, I have to, you know, have employees, I have to pay rent. I'm running all these things, man. And it was a crazy time.
So that was a personal training business in 2000?
Yes.
Got it. Okay. Did you have your own location? Did you just take?
So I started inside of an LA Fitness, inside of a big box gym. I started in LA Fitness. You know, I'm LA Fitness back in the day, they give rights to locations for a company to run their personal training. They didn't have their own personal trainers. So basically I pay them a huge rent every month just to be able to, you know, run my personal training business out of there. And when I started that, I didn't know anything about marketing business. I didn't think anything about how to set up corporation, LLC, what I should do and all that. All I knew is how to get people in shape. I was never been a stranger to working hard, and it was my passion. So I didn't mind working, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80 hours a week, And I did that for a period of 4 or 5 years. I mean, talk about work 7 days a week. And I had some great success, you know, I had some great success. But in 2005, I decided that I wanted to retire from bodybuilding and I want to take this business seriously. Before it was just a hobby, I was making money, I was, you know, paying my expenses and all that. But now I wanted to take it to the next level. That's when I first hired my first mentor. And next thing you know, I doubled the business, tripled the business, and I started doing really well. But something unexpected happened. That's when you told in your intro in 2008, the economy went down, and I literally pretty much almost lost everything.
Wow. So let's talk a little bit about that, because one of the things that I like to, you know, really hone in on this show is people go through shit, right? Like you could be on top of the world one day and the next day you're not. And that really can mess up your mindset and, you know, put you into a downward spiral. So I'm curious about what happened to you after that crash. What happened to your mindset? And
Well, brother, you know, if I was ever the most depressed, it was that of my divorce. And we'll talk about that. You know, I think in life, there's a couple of things that you look that can happen to you that you can start regretting your decisions, you know, and one of them is, you know, being, you know, well off and losing it all because you didn't have financial literacy and you didn't know what to do. Right. So, you know, when everything started going down in 2008, you know, I started looking back at all the years that I've been working for 8 years in there, right? From 2000 to 2008. And I'm like, man, I made some stupid choices with my money. I bought homes on an 80-20 loan back then. You know, I leased cars, you know, and, you know, I was out just, you know, doing extravagant spending. And now that 2008 happens and I'm about to have my first child, now I'm dead broke. So I started like living in the past and what should I change and what should I've done and this and that. And I soon realized that you can't do that. You can't change the past. You know, all you can do is learn from it and move on. Because if you just keep dwelling in the past, that's how you get depressed. And I went into like a little, you know, kind of a little depression, man. You know, I stopped working out, which was a total mistake, you know, because that's always been my, my anchor. And next thing you know, for a few months, man, I was going downward spin. And then one day I got up and I'm like, you know what? Enough of this. Enough of this pity party. All you got to do is get up every day, do your best, and figure what you're going to do. You know, because you see, if you live in the past, that's where depression lives. If you try to worry about the future, you can't change the future, so you can't worry about it. You know, then that's where anxiety lives. I've learned at that time that all I can do is try to win one day at a time. So I get up every day, put a plan together, and I go. So from 2009 to 2013, for a period of 4 years, I got up every day, put a plan together, went and tried to execute the plan, and I failed. Got up every day, went and tried to execute a plan, failed. For 4 years, 365 days, every day I had a plan, and every day it didn't work. Wow. You know, and you know, but the plan, just getting up and having a direction was the way for me to get out of my depression. Because depression also sets in when you have too much idle time in your hands, when you have too much white spaces on your calendar. You're sitting down and you're thinking. But if you're working, you don't have time to think. You think, you put an action plan together from a 30,000 foot view, you put it on a daily plan every single day, you execute, and that's how I was able to fight depression because I made a plan, I stuck to it, and I failed and I failed and I failed and I failed and I failed. And for 4 years I failed, till then, We found the formula. We started, you know, seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. We started like, oh my God, okay, I think I'm out of the funk, a financial funk. And then one day I'm at work, bam, I got served divorce papers. So I went from one hole to another hole.
So before we even move on, there's a lot to unpack there too, because first of all, I didn't even realize, so you had a child on the way during in 2008 when everything happened or right after
yes,
that?
Yes. In wow. 2000, you know, my daughter Bailey was born in July 3rd of 2009.
So that must obviously have been added pressure. I mean,
I felt like a loser. I felt like a loser because my why is to provide for my family, because I never had the dad to provide for my family. I didn't want to be like my dad. And now I'm standing. I never forget that day. You know, I never forget that day, Josh. I was in a restaurant. You know, my wife at the time was sitting in front of me. She was pregnant 6 months, and we were minus $314 in our bank account. And I'm crying in front of her. So I don't know what to do. No, we're not doing good, but I'll do whatever, you know, I'm going to go and do whatever I can do to get us going. And that's what happened.
Did you have full confidence in yourself? Were you doubting yourself throughout this period?
You know, I was doubting myself. You know, I was doubting myself. I didn't have full confidence. You know, I didn't know what to do, you know, but all I knew that I'm going to put in some work until I figure it out. You know, like I said, I'm a firm believer of getting up and having a direction, getting up and do something. You know, it's like this. Here's the way life works, right? I don't know much about baseball, you know, but I know one thing. I guess you get three strikes and you're out, right? Yeah. That's a little bit I know about baseball. But if you get up every single day in life, every single you get up and you can have a swing at it. Every day you're going to have a swing at it. So in life, you can pretty much have unlimited swings. All you have to do is swing. I don't care how bad you are at swinging. If you swing enough times, you're going to hit one ball out of the park. All you have to do is keep swinging. And I've learned that. And all I got up, like I said, for 4 years, I swung and swung and swung and swung. Nothing. Till one of them, you know, hit. And that's why we're here. That's why you have me on your podcast, or I would have been on your podcast. I would have been like some nobody.
Yeah. Wow, man. So, okay. So to pull yourself out of that, you created a plan for every single day. And I love what you said about depression living in the past and anxiety living in the future, because it's so true. And anybody listening to this knows that if you're thinking about the past or you're thinking about the future, you're either thinking about depression or anxiety. So that is a huge point. And I think that what you said about not having too much time on your calendar, waking up every day with a purpose and having a bunch of things to do doesn't leave much time left for depression and the anxiety and all those things, because you're too focused.
Yeah.
So awesome. Well, let's move on to what you were going to get into with the divorce. That's another thing that hit you when you weren't expecting it.
Yeah, man. So, you know, they say this, that is so true. You know, in life, you're either in a problem, left the problem, or headed towards one. You know what I mean? So I thought, oh my God, once I get out of this, I'm going to be problem free. So I was like, oh my God, I started getting myself out of the mud, and then boom, I got slammed with another thing, you know, and I was totally unexpected, you know, and I was devastated. Again, my kids are my why. And now, you know, I find myself, you know, move out of the house, live in a hotel room at 40, you know, and now I'm like, oh my God, Sam, good job. Now he finally got back on your feet, but now you're gonna lose your family. What are you gonna do? You know, and I went back to the routine that I created. And but I said, all right, so what is my top priority in life? What are the three, you know, what are things that I want to concentrate on and spend every awakening moment doing? Okay. And I encourage everybody, all your listeners, everybody who's watching this, I want you to write down 2 to 3 things that you want to do when you're awake. Categories. So my number one was like, well, my top category is I want to spend time with my children. Okay. But since now with the divorce, I only see them on the weekends and on Wednesdays. When I'm not with the children, how do I want to spend my time? Well, I want to provide for them, which means work. And if I'm not working and I'm not with the children, how do I want to do the rest of my time? Work out and be healthy so I can do 1 and 2. So I can start 1 and 2. So once you're crystal clear on your priorities and how you want to spend your time, the decision-making becomes very easy. So my schedule was full of those activities. Okay, I'm either with the children, I'm either at work, working, or I'm at the gym. And I had a specific schedule for each one. And I just, to fight depression, I had no white calendar, no white spaces on my calendar. I just followed a plan and just followed the plan and just followed the plan. And at that time, the Camp Transformation Center had like 8 locations when I was divorced. But because I had nothing better to do than work out and be with the children, I concentrated so much time to work, and we were able to blow it up and make it to what it is today. So have I not been divorced, we probably wouldn't have what we have today.
Wow. And one of the things you said there too in the beginning was you were saying, once I've solved this problem, all my problems will be over. Once I figure this out. And, you know, I hear so many people, podcasts that I listen to or people that I listen to say, once I have $1 million, then I'll be happier. Once
I
have,
that was me too. That was me too.
Yeah, that was me too. I mean, I think it's a lot of people, I think, that believe something is going to solve all their problems. Money is going to solve all their problems or whatever it is. But from your experience, that's not the case. I mean, there's always problems. What did you say? You're either coming. What was that you said? You're
either in a problem, left the problem, or headed towards one.
So you got to embrace them and make each one a breakthrough.
You got to embrace them. You got to love problems. Look, you know, I went to medical school. I got my pre-medicine degree, as you know, and I got my doctor of chiropractic. Do you know that stress is a necessity for a living organism? Like, you would not be able to live without stress. It's a fact. Okay? Wow. So there's no such a thing as no stress, zero. Because if you have no stress, no stimulus, then you would not be alive, right? So everybody has stress. So why some people are stressed out and some people are not? Why some people, the smallest thing, they flip out and they stress out. And then some people can have a burden of the whole world on their shoulder and still thrive. It's the way you process it. It's the way you think about it. And again, let's go back. Let's go back really quick. You know, here's also another tip for handling stress and handling things. We already talked about the past, and we all talked about the future, right? So you can only control and stress about what you can change. And you can, if you cannot change a circumstance or a person or an event or an action, then there's no reason for you to stress about. So stay in your lane and concentrate and focus on the things that you can change for yourself. And that's what I've learned. And that's how I'm able to, you know, literally some days, you know, I have the whole, whole world on my shoulder with 110 locations, 300 employees, you know, 6 different companies, and a family to run. You know, there's days that, you know, I got a bunch of stuff, but you're like, Sam, how do you handle it? Well, I can only do what I can do.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you for that advice. I actually wanted like a little bit more advice from you on something that we're going to switch gears for a second, because I recently had a transformation. And I think that what you just said about, you know, basically looking at things you can change versus the things you can't and letting those stress you out. I had so much anxiety about so many things that I couldn't change that I heard enough times what you just said and finally looked within at what I can change. Mm-hmm. And basically just that was my like breakthrough moment. And I decided to start working out every day. I've lost almost 90 pounds at this point, like completely transformed every part of my physical, mental, everything. But I told myself for literally 15 years, every single January 1st, I'm going to lose weight this year. I'm going to do this year. And I never did it. I always quit on myself. And I kind of know what made the change. Like I said, I know what made the change for me looking within and all those things. And I could get way deep into that. But I'm just curious on what your advice would be for somebody that just continues to quit on themselves. Somebody like me who tells themselves every year, I want to lose weight this year. And then 6 months from now, you look back and say, man, if I only started 6 months ago, I'd be healthier now or whatever the case may be. What advice would you give to somebody who just constantly quits on themselves?
So one thing I want you to understand, the reason a lot of people quit on themselves is because they set a goal so far out that every January, I want to lose 100 pounds this year. I want to lose 50 pounds this year, you know, and a lot of times it's like your body and you rejects that, your mind rejects that because they're like, well, that's too far, that's too unreachable. Again, the best thing to do is, okay, I want to lose this many pounds, but what do I need to do every day to get there? And, you know, what do I need to do to get every day? All I need to do is walk 1 hour a day and maybe cut out fried foods for now and be able to just concentrate. Remember, concentrate on winning one day at a time. Are you going to win every single day? No. You know, I'm sure you had a weak moment. You had a cheat meal, one, you know, in your journey, you know, once in a while, right? But that doesn't mean that you lost the war. You're not going to win every day. You're not going to win every battle. But you got to concentrate on winning the war at the end, you know, and the war is what really matters, you know, and, so it's, you know, the concept I like to call it, it's called the compound effect. Little daily rituals that over time becomes huge. Yeah. You know, and that's what a lot of people do wrong when it comes to any kind of goal setting or, you know, weight loss or anything like that.
Yeah, that makes total sense. That was the biggest thing for me. Once I started focusing on just instead of losing 100 pounds, it was, okay, I'm going to make a daily list, walk this much a day, don't eat this many carbs or whatever. And that's it. Like it's very simple.
You break
it down.
Simple.
Yeah.
Brilliance are always in the basics.
Yeah. Awesome, man. So speaking of on a daily routine, I've heard your daily routine before. I'd love for you to share what you do on a daily basis.
So, you know, I get up at 4 a.m. I read my goals. I look over my schedule, which I print out the night before. So, you know, my day actually starts the night before because I don't want to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. But hey, what am I doing? So I print out my schedule the night before. So I take a look at it. I know what I'm supposed to do. You know what I'm supposed to do the next day. I close her out. So at 4 o'clock in the morning, I get up, put my gym clothes on, you know, read my goals, head to the gym. I work out from like 5 to 7. You know, then then from 7 to 8:30, I take my son for a walk. And then I come home, I start work, I would say about 9 o'clock to 3 or 4. Then after that, everything's shut down. It's family time.
Awesome. Do you ever wake up not motivated?
You know, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not a robot. I'm not a broccoli eating cyborg. You know, I'm just like anybody else. I like to sleep in. You know, I like to hit the snooze button. I'm not going to do that. But I know that one thing that I've learned that is so important, and it's my core values, is never, ever let yourself down. Never, ever say you're going to do something to yourself and break the promises that you make to yourself. Because that's how you're going to crush your self-esteem. You know, and no matter what I can come home at 1 o'clock in the morning. And let's just say I told myself I'm going to exercise all week. I'll still get up at four. You know, I still get up. I'm going to go to the gym. I might be a zombie. I might not be able to give it 100%. And it doesn't even matter what workout is. It doesn't matter if I'm not going to get a great workout. It's the fact that I said I'm going to do something, I'm going to be there. That to me is more important than the workout itself. The workout might be the worst workout that I've ever done. It would have probably been better not me not going to the gym. But the mindset is more important. I train my mind. If I'm going to say something, I'm going to follow through. And that's, you know, that's been a pivotal part of my success. To keep the big mouth promises that I made to myself.
Yeah, every promise you keep to yourself builds your self-confidence. Yeah. Absolutely. So I've heard you talk about using your dark side. Shout out Tim Grover. What are your thoughts on channeling the dark side? Can you talk about that a little bit?
I mean, Tim in his book, Relentless, man. I mean, yeah, I couldn't have said any better than him. I actually got that from Tim because when I was reading the book, I'm like, oh man, that's me. See, a lot of times, man, I was that guy who everybody was like, well, where does your motivation come from? Where do you, and I was like trying to figure out where my motivation comes from. But then now, and when I started reading Tim's book, I'm like, my motivation came from all the bullying. My motivation came from getting beat up. My motivation came from our car not starting out every morning, and we had to push it. My mom had to pop it into the clutch and have the car smoke all day. My motivation came from our car breaking down everywhere, my mom being embarrassed. My motivation came up with my friends finding out that, you know, in high school finding out that we got food stamps and made fun of me because we got food stamps. You know, figuring, you know, my, you know, they found out what, I live in a low housing project, and Tom talked to me about food. Those are all my motivation that came from that. So that was my dark side. I use that as a fuel. I'm like, oh, well, because, you know, I came to the United States and I had no dad. And, you know, everybody called me names. I can't really do anything myself. You know, I can't. No. Then, you know, I'm not going to do that. You know what I mean? You know, I'm going to get up. I'm going to fight back. I'm going to use everything and everything for motivation. One of my favorite quotes is by Frank Sinatra. You know which one? I'm going to let you, you know, say it. Is the, oh, the, you know, he said the best revenge.
Yeah, the best revenge.
Massive success.
Yeah.
The ultimate revenge is massive success. So, you know, I don't, you know, it's funny because all the people who never believed in me, all the people who bullied me or, you know, talk, you know, all that kind of, you know, call me names, are now my friends. They, you know, we're friends, you know, we're, I don't hold grudges, but I always tell them, thank you. Thank you, because you got me out of my comfort zone. You know, you got me out of comfort zone. Like, I you know, you put me in so much pain that made me become a man, made me become, take action.
Yeah.
If I was born in a, you know, in a great family where everything was good, money was plenty, and I would have never had the dark side, never had to push. So I'm so glad that it was that, because that's the meaning of life.
Yeah. So you said you, first of all, thank you for sharing that. I know that will help a lot of people who have had, you know, their fair share of experiences. You said you got that from Tim's book. So just quick question. Are you an avid reader? Do you read?
Love reading. I'm a nerd, man. I mean, I'm a nerd. Like, I rap, you know, you leave me alone, I can just geek out on books all day. Geek out on programs all day. If you go downstairs to my office, we have about 3,000 books, and that's not an exaggeration, and I just love reading and learning, and I'm in love with personal development, personal transformation, and becoming the best version of yourself. You know, it's not about money anymore for me. You know, I've achieved, you know, financial freedom. You know, I achieve everything beyond my wildest dreams. You know, that doesn't mean I don't want to do more. But now, it's, to me, is learning and becoming the best version of myself in all areas of life.
And reading helps you do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you read every day?
I read every day.
Awesome. I just started reading every day too. So we'll see. I'm excited. So I have a few more questions for you, but first I'd love for you to just tell people where they can find you. Everybody needs to follow Sam. So where can people find you?
Thank you. You can follow me at Sam Bakhtiar, SamBakhtiar. All my social media handles are the same, or you can text me directly at 909-200-4015.
Awesome. I'll put all that up on the screen too, if you're watching this in the video version. Tell us a little bit about, you started the CAM Transformation Center, you've scaled now to over 100 locations, incredible business. Tell us about a few, you know, I said earlier, I love talking about getting knocked down and how you pull yourself out and getting back up. So I'm curious about maybe a few failures or challenges that you've had with that business and how you've overcome them. Talk a little bit about that.
Oh, brother, I remember about 3 years ago, we had a disgruntled employee. You know, it happens when you have 300 of them.
Yeah.
And went and complained to the employment department. And see, the employment department never comes and teaches you the correct procedures. You know, we open a company, you know, and you think you're doing everything right, but you know, they change the laws and they don't have somebody from the employment department make sure, hey, let me make sure you guys are doing things correctly. Only when you do something incorrectly, they come and barge you and fine you and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So the employee complained and we got audited, and there was something we were doing procedurally wrong, totally by, not by on purpose, is by ignorance, because we didn't know how the law was, and you know, and all that kind of stuff, which was huge. And then we hired this attorney to talk to the employment department. The attorney didn't take any action the way he was supposed to. Next thing you know, there was a press release. The Camp Transformation Center, you know, owes employees like $8 million. And I was like, what? And of course, with that, the social media went crazy. And they said, oh, they're ripping their employees off. And, you know, they're not taking care of people. And we knew they were this and that. And, you know, because you're successful, your success all of a sudden is because you rip somebody off and all that. Not all the crazy things that you've gone through. So, you know, it was tough. So, you know, instead of like giving into the madness, we just had to huddle down and see what was going on. I'm like, what was the press release about? We found out the attorney wasn't doing the job, so we got another attorney. And then we went with the EDD, went through a complete audit. We got fined, which not nowhere near the $8 million, you know what I mean? Nowhere even close to that, you know, but we paid and we moved on. But it was crazy to see how people are ready to slam you down when something goes wrong. When all these people are turning, oh, we knew. The reason the guy is so successful because he was ripping employees the whole time. He was doing it on purpose. You know, and you know, you learn from that. So in life, when things like that happen, you have to be able to control the noise and focus, again, on what you can do and what you can control. You can't control the noise, so you have to mute it. It's kind of like those, what's it called, the noise-canceling headphones. Put that on. Forget about the outside world. Tune in right now what we're going to do.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So one of the things you mentioned early on in this interview is that your business doubled or tripled when you hired a mentor. And I know you have the 1% Club. So I'm just curious if you could talk about how important you think a mentor or coach is, and then also a little bit about what you do with the 1% Club.
It's immensely important. You know, if somebody is doing what you want to do, somebody's already where you want to be, the best way to do is get a mentorship from that person so that you can jumpstart your success. Look, the most precious thing we have is time. You know, why make all the mistakes the same guy made? He already made them for you. So we can avoid that. So we can stop messing around and kind of like, you know, jumpstart to where he is a lot faster than he got there, right? So to me, that's a no-brainer. But in this day where, you know, we see everybody is a mentor, everybody's a guru, everybody has this and everybody has that, you have to kind of be careful. You got to really, really vet them out, make sure they're a real deal, and make sure they're doing really what you want to do. You know, and if you find the right mentor, it'll change your life, guaranteed. It has changed mine. It has changed millions of others. And it's the best way. The one thing I do with the, you know, the 1% Club is help people become a 1%er and become a CEO of their life. So a lot of people are just living life by default, you know, and they wonder why they're not where they want to be. And they feel like they're just stuck and they're just, you know, spinning their wheels in the mud. We got to sit back, home back, like, hey, what is your perfect life looks like? What do you want to do? How's your perfect day looks like? And let's design a life that gets you that perfect day. Most people have to say, oh, well, I got to make some money so I can do this. Not necessarily. You first, let's design this, and then we'll design that to fit this. You know, and once they understand that, and once we'll make them some money and design their life, you know, nothing is like that. You know, we all come to America for freedom. I came to America certainly because I didn't want to get bombed down every night. I want to have freedom. But are you really free? If you get up every morning, you hate what you do, you hate the people that you work with, and you're not where you want to be. You know, that's a death sentence. And I want people to get out of the rat race, get out of, you know, and because before you know it, if you don't do nothing about it, you're old and then you're going to be on your deathbed wishing, what if I would have done that?
Yeah, I love it.
Could have, should have.
Yeah, I love what you said about, you know, hiring or getting a coach who has the success you want to attain. I always talk about that. Like, even with this podcast, you know, I think you know Omar El-Attar. He has his podcast, The Passionate Few. And as soon as I decided I want to start this podcast, I hired him as my coach. I'm like, he's got what I want. I'm going to figure it out. And in 6 days, I figured out what would have probably taken me 6 months on my own.
Omar is a Michael Jordan of podcasts. You know what I mean? He's at the top. He's certainly helped me. And exactly, you would have probably been in another year figured out what he taught you in a month.
Yeah. So I love what you talk about that. So that's awesome. I got one more question for you. What would you tell somebody who is feeling stuck? You know, maybe they don't see that light at the end of the tunnel like you talked about. They feel like giving up. What would be the best advice for somebody to just switch and cultivate that mindset that we've been talking about this whole time?
See, you're never stuck. You know, Jim Rohn said that, hey, if you feel like you're stuck, move. You're not a tree. I mean, only trees can't move, right? You know, you have two legs, you have feet and all that kind of thing. You move. You're never stuck. So you just have to make a decision. Now, when are you going to make the decision? Okay. That's the thing. The reason you're stuck is because of this, because the pain of staying the same, right, is not as great as pain of change. You're going to unstuck yourself when the pain of staying the same is actually greater than the pain of change.
I just got goosebumps, man. That is so true.
So you're going to get yourself unstuck. You know, once that pain, once you become so pain, you're in pain, they're like, I just can't fucking do this anymore. I'm out. I gotta figure out. That's when you are.
Wow, I love it. Well, Sam, thank you so much, man. This has been unbelievable. There's so many points. I can't wait to rewatch this myself. So thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
And I appreciate you.
Hopefully we'll meet in person one day when all this shit is over and would love to do round two. So thank you so much, man. Appreciate you. Have a great day.
Thank you, Josh. Bye-bye.
Thanks for watching Decide Your Destiny. If you got value out of today's episode, please leave a review, like, and subscribe. It would mean a whole lot. Thanks again and have a great day.